With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Kane and Bucks. Can't
stop addicting. Oh yeah, it's a very good morning if you're waking up to us this morning. You're with Kane and Bucks on SEN Breakfast. Sydney coach John Longmire is going to join us. The buck stops here in a matter of moments. Questions without notice and your calls as well. We'd love for you to get involved. And a lot of people having their say on the booing of Jason Horne-Francis at the footy. The head knocks, is the bump dead? We'll put all of that on the agenda for questions without notice a little bit later on. And what should Nathan Buckley's song be if he kicks a goal? And should the AFL players each have their own songs? Because I love what Charlie Cameron has done. And now Josh Rochelli at Adelaide. Bucks is here and he's fired up. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Kane. Yeah, we're going to jump into Buck Stops here now. And I want to kick off with heart and soul players. We saw Brisbane take on Melbourne. Max Gawn went down, but Dane Zorko came back. And I just think that that's something that we love to see in our own teams, and it's something we saw on the weekend.
Yeah, well, clearly there's an emotional toll to your team when you lose your skipper that early in the game.
Yeah, it was pretty grim, obviously, the scoreline as well. I had a bit of time down the rooms by myself in that first quarter, and you know, I've had good news scans before, and I've had some bad ones, so I'm just hoping I get one of the good ones.
I think that it's very early in the season, so you can get good performances and bad, and the swings and the highs and lows are considerable, and Brisbane's were. Their first round was really poor. Their second round was excellent. And maybe it coincides with the return of a Dane Zorko, who I believe is a heart and soul player for Brisbane, and he was excellent. But there was no doubt that the Melbourne team was affected by the worst scenario, possible scenario of Max Gawn. The look on his face, the look on his on the interchange bench at the end of the first quarter, Mark Williams,
even Choco was flat. What was it? You can't shut him up, and even he didn't look like he was up and about.
Well, he was sitting back in the dugouts, yeah. And he was flat as the coach looked flat. Like there was a general malaise across the Demons players, and when you're so invested in those guys, I think it does have an effect. So I think we saw that to some extent. So who are yours? And keep an eye on those going forward.
Just on Zorko, he did an interview with Triple M pre-game, and I was really fascinated by what he had to say.
I've done a lot of work on my psychological stuff over the pre-season and late last year, so I'm pretty confident whatever they choose to throw at me tonight, if that may be their attack, I'll be well equipped to handle it.
It's good insight.
Yeah, and just quickly on that, the more I go on, the more I wonder if you try and dumb down these irregular and sharp edges of your personality and of your psyche, do you actually take away what makes you great? Mm. So Dane Zorko has carried this, you know, like a chip on his shoulder throughout his whole career, and he's been very successful from it. And every now and then he steps over the line. I don't want him to smooth his rough edges out, because I think we get the best out of him. And I think it's true of all of us. We've got to, you know, embrace our imperfections and something. But it's good to see that he's prepared to work on it, and hopefully it just continues to become a strength. In the same vein, my second point is that I think Geelong will be okay. I don't think that there's any reason to panic, and I don't think their coach is either.
Here's Chris Scott.
I don't really think there's much merit in sort of going back 12 months ago, because we were different then, and we knew we'd been deliberately different. I get that negative momentum can kind of throw you off the rails a little bit, but we're miles away from that. So I thought we were a work in progress midway, three quarters of the way through last year as well.
And that is accurate. And it's a reality that not everyone considers, given that they were so brilliant at the end of the year. The year before that, Melbourne were a work in progress three quarters of the way through the year before they ultimately won the flag.
Does it mean, though, that you still ask questions about, like, when you say they're going to be okay, do you sweep that under the carpet and just go, it'll turn, we'll be okay? Or
no,
would they
don't.
Be concerned about because they do look slow through the midfield. They got some players that aren't impacting like they were last year, clearly. I don't think they're anywhere near as hungry as what they were towards the back end of the last year, where they were smashing teams and beating up on teams.
Correct.
And defensively, they were really strong. Now they're not, but you're right, because they've got Gold Coast, Hawthorne, West Coast the next three. They're going to be 3-2, and in 3 weeks' time, we're going to be not talking that much about Geelong. But it's not to say there aren't a few deficiencies in the game.
Go and play at home, talking about negative momentum and positive momentum in games is huge. Momentum in season is huge. I think Geelong have a competitive advantage being able to go down. They're one of the few. They're the only Victorian club with a home ground advantage, largely. So they do get that. They've taken full toll on that. But the point being about their heart and soul players, there's no Joel Selwood there. And I think Tom Stewart is probably their next heart and soul guy that just holds them together, the glue out the back, probably with Cam Guthrie. I don't think Dangerfield, even though he's their skipper, I don't think he's a heart and soul player for them. So they're still working out what life after Joel Selwood's going to be. And I reckon they've lost the next guy in Tom Stewart who draws them together like that. So there's a bit of a dynamic bit of growth that needs to happen there as well. And that's not guaranteed, but I believe that in good organisations in their capacity to get that done. Talking about growth and connection and finding the most of what you've got, the Saints have been huge. Ross Lyon's imprint is really clear, but it's their... And the defensive numbers jump off the page.
Through the roof.
They've only had 7 goals kicked against them from turnover in 2 games, which you expected. But what we didn't expect was how effective their front 6 has been. And they've been, brilliant the first 2 weeks.
I'm not sure what expectation I had. I have trying to build up my understanding of the group and the capacity. There's no doubt we've got theoretical first-choice players out, particularly out of our front half. But in saying that, it's anything's possible, and if we'll convince that the 23 that we're picking were match feared and rock hard feared and knew how we wanted them to play. So, look, it's a game of competition. The game's in good shape for winning contested ball and ground ball, and we do that pretty well.
I think this is part of his DNA. Theoretical first choice players. Like, how good is that? And that means that everyone has them in their best 22 when we put up a best 22 the St Kilda list. But so yes, Max King is that, and Tim Membry is that, and Jack Higgins is that and was that in the first 6, 7, 8 games of 2022. St Kilda's forward efficiency was through the roof. Those three blokes, King, Membry and Higgins, when the ball went to them, they were in the top 10 for scoring goals from being targeted inside 50. Philippou wasn't on a list that time last year. And he's in 2 games, he stood up. He's kicked three goals in the weekend. Caminiti wasn't on a list. He wasn't on a list until a couple of months ago. Cordy had never played forward. And he kicked 2 goals. And Gresham, they're getting the best out of. So,
is it sustainable? Is this style sustainable?
With attitude, with high attitude and effort and intensity, and Ross talks about that flat out. So he coaches that flat out. Yes, it is.
But is it unrealistic? And we've seen even Brisbane in round 1, when they were a fraction off, they got smashed. How do you replicate that for such a long season? So my fear for St Kilda is, and it's a glass half empty approach on what should be full, because what they've done is extraordinary. But, and I see it a little bit with Adelaide. I admire greatly how Adelaide play, but they struggle to do it for 4 quarters because of the taxing nature of the way that is to win. At some point, they're going to have to find another way to win, and that would be my fear for Ross and the Saints.
Well, the reason it's sustainable for Ross is because it will always be built on solid defence. Mm. And they're not actually relying on that high-pressure game that has been his DNA. They're 9th for pressure differential. So they're not putting over-the-top pressure on the opposition, and they're absorbing it pretty well. It's just their really solid defensive profile. They've got players that have a dip. And St Kilda have traditionally been a side, even under Alan Richardson and Brett Ratten, quite high pressure, high intensity side. They're great runners, apparently. So that's coming to the fore. But yeah, it's unconventional, but it's heading in
Essendon
the right direction.
This week, good game.
Oh yeah, that because they've Great been game. They've been excellent as well. The next one I want to talk about is a new position in footy. We talk about quarterbacks all the time and blokes that set up the play, but it's specifically the sixth defender that plays closest to the midfield. I think that this position is redefining in modern footy and the way that we're seeing the attack control defence in the early stages of this year and last year. And I think that we're seeing this position and the person who plays this be so important in any team's makeup.
I don't know if I dare Ken to do it, but reality is, Nick's a great player, like an emerging talent, isn't he? So, we're going to embrace it. I said to Nick on Friday, I said, mate, this is probably coming. And we got all the things we worked through. He got tagged in a practice game, learnt so much from it. We want to support him as a team. Reality was in the first quarter, he's getting tagged and the scoreboard was still ticking over in our favour. So I said to Nick before the game, again yesterday, if this happens, the scoreboard's ticking over, you just got to fight your own battle, mate, but we'll support you through that. But he's got an incredible ability to play multiple roles, which makes it hard to tag.
Probably should have referenced Nick Dacos going into that grab, but he is one of the players that I reckon is doing it. I reckon it started, we were talking about Bevo and his bona fides as a coach. I think it started with Matthew Boyd, who needed to work out of the midfield and he played as that aggressive sixth defender off back of stoppage.
Did it start before that? I remember having to tag Andrew McLeod as a defensive half forward and McLeod went to half back and he was doing that. And this was sort of early 2000s, 07, 08-ish era.
So well, there's always been attacking defenders. But
is this defender worrying? So has the change been that this defender is not really even worrying about an opponent?
That's the thing. I think he's just another midfielder.
Yeah.
And I think that Matty Boy did it. Caleb Daniel was another that basically ran away from his opponent, let him in like behind him, and he would go up to stoppage. So I think they were the two that did it. I think Jack Chris was one that came through. Burn Jones for Port was one. Jake Lloyd for Sydney. Mm, he's really aggressive. Lockie Whitfield, get the ball in their hands and use it off the back, but also basically become another midfielder. But what Collingwood are doing with Nick Dacos or Jack Chris or Scott Pendlebury's even playing that role periodically, it's just another midfielder.
Mm.
And they're backing their back five behind them to really get the job done. Sheasel's been played in that role for North in some shape or form. Sinclair's always played it for St Kilda. And I think we saw late last night with a shift in plan from West Coast Eagles, Jermaine Jones was a player that played that role. I'm running aggressively off the back.
So if your team doesn't have one, and you mentioned Burn Jones, but I'm really not really playing the role as effectively as the others, you're at a big
He's not as skillful, no. but he's a hard-nosed ball winner.
He might be playing that worker, role, but he's not doing it as effectively as the other names. If you don't have a player playing that role, you're at a significant disadvantage.
I believe so. Yeah. And if you don't, if you can't create a player there and a structure that supports his aggressive intent. So I think that Adam Saad for Carlton should be released from defending and actually put into this role. Mm. I think it would help Carlton even more to be to give their forward half even more access. And Saad potentially didn't have the tank for it 2 or 3 years ago, but I reckon he might
we
now.
We might ask John Longmire about that because Nick Blakey has all the weapons to be the best at it with Nick Dacos in the game, I reckon.
Well, and the other thing is you can't rely on one. You sort of, if you've got three or four or five blokes that are bouncing off, well, then that bloke's even more dangerous. The last one I want to go to is just the performance of the North Melbourne in and under midfielder, one of the most influential players over the last 12 games in terms of stats and impact, and that's Luke Davies-Uniacke.
Oh, just so pleased for the players. They've put in a lot of work and been smacked around as a footy club the last couple of years. So, we went on the road against a really good side and they came at us really hard in the second half with, 40,000 spectators just cheering them on. It's like they got an extra man. So, for us to hold on in those circumstances, it was just frantic stuff in that those last couple of minutes.
So, Clarko's wrapped. Like they've done what Collingwood have. They've, the first two games, less than a goal, wins, won the close ones, and we'll talk more about that last kick at some point. But LDU's performances have been through the roof, and this is a kid who, 2 years ago, the club were working out how they were going to get the best out of him. He was not performing well in the twos, and there was thoughts that they had a bust on their hands with an early selection.
They thought LDU might be a bust.
Yeah, and it was around his anxieties. It was around his expectations on himself, his capacity to actually become the professional, or understand what he needed to do as a professional to then be able to go and make the most of his talent. And there's no guarantee that players get through that, and players come through it at different rates if they do. So it might be mental and emotional maturity as much as it is physical maturity, but clearly it's all come together for this kid, and North Melbourne are the beneficiaries of it, and it's all credit to him and them for being patient enough and working through the hardship to be able to get to this point. His first two games, so he's had 30 touches each of the first two rounds. He's an equal handball and kicker because his contested work inside is so good. He's had 10 clearances and 11 clearances. Mm. He's had 5 tackles and 6 tackles. So he gets to work in the harder elements
kicks
of the game.
Goals.
He's had 5 or 6 inside 50s. He's averaged and he's kicked a goal a game. I mean, there's not many players in the comp. There's players that are winning more footy, but there's not many players that are as impactful. And when you've got that, he was in a team with a 2-win season, but still took steps forward. Mm. And now there's a little bit more happening around him, and we're going to see the best of him. You were suggesting that someone would play like Lee Matthews. It's not him.
Oh,
it?
No, it's not him. I think Nick Dacos's low center of gravity is Lee Matthews-esque. From what I've seen, you know, Lee Matthews, the vision you see, he picks the ball up and he's able to sort of spin in a phone box, and he doesn't lose his feet. I'm not suggesting they're the same player, but there's
a bit hippie as well.
Lee Matthews' qualities, or Nick, they would be about the same height, I imagine. Perhaps Nick's a little bit taller, but their agility, low centre of gravity, and the ability to not fall over was who I was likening to Lee Matthews. It's a big call, I know. But Luke Davies, Uniacke, 6 Brownlow votes already. And can I just add Nick Larkey? Because I was looking at his numbers on Friday, and he'd either kicked big bags or it wasn't much after that. The in-between stuff, I see. He's got to bridge the gap between... I want to see some twos and some threes from Larkey. When he's not kicking fives and sixes, it can't be one or none. So to then see him back it up after 6 in round 1, go on a tough road trip against a very good defence and kick 4, big tick for him as well. So the buck stop here was for Tyre Power, tipping winners on tyre safety all season. Michael wants to have his say. Jose, Dan, all lining up on the IMAR Insurance open line. You can give us a call there and send us a 40 Winks temper text. Get your unique bed match profile and find the right bed for you. 40 Winks, serious about sleep. Want to talk about Essendon and some terrific coaching from Brad Scott as well on the other side of this.
Kane and Bucks. Can't stop
addicted. We are here, John Longmire, coming up after 8 o'clock. We're also going to go through all of the teams with our new segment, What Does the Result Say More About? We'll do that after 8 o'clock. Questions without notice and your calls. But Bucks, just quickly on LDU.
I got a text from his manager, Rob D'Orazio, as I was talking about him. And I wasn't aware that Luke lost his old man a couple of years ago and how tight they were. And I reckon it sort of just reinforces my point of patience and time, and to try and not to judge or to stereotype anyone too early, especially young men that are playing in a public, they're trying to ply their trade in a public sphere. And I remember when he was drafted, he was seen as, he's a surfy kid. He doesn't really love footy, but yeah, you know, but he's pretty good at it. But when you go through something like that, you can only... A lot of the listeners, a lot of us would know when someone's taken away from you that you've got that affinity with that really gets you. It takes time, and he would still be dealing with it now. And maybe he's playing for his old man, but I just think it's just great to see young men come to hand. It's great to see them blossom and find themselves. And sometimes trauma and struggle does that for us, whether it's in a professional sense or in a very personal sense. But in any event, what he's doing is amazing. And you just love to see young people, you know, putting their best out in the park and being rewarded for it.